Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Awesome product, great staff, and terrific service department. It's all Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Bob Nightingale, USA Today, in just a few moments. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day.
Ball, left corner, Frank. Floated into Zion. Aldridge on him. Up top, Lonzo. Stutter step back to Zion. Oh, my. Step back three. Left way! Swish! No! This is not happening!
No, it happened again. The Pelicans still lost. All right, so... I think what he I haven't even seen a highlight. I was a little busy last night, including the game and then traveling back, so I haven't seen it. He obviously is the first overall pick, has tremendous and justifiably, because I mean he's, you know, you watched him in college basketball last year. He's a riveting player. And he stepped in. He had 17 second-half points, 22 altogether. Now, San Antonio, by the way, as a footnote, see, this is the problem I have. When winning becomes a footnote, that's not good. The point is to win the game. Now, it's exciting that he got going the whole thing, but San Antonio still won the game 121-117. But it was an exciting debut for Zion Williamson. Now he only has another 999 to go. All right. He is one of the best in the business. We're going to talk a lot of baseball here over the next few minutes. That is Bob Nightingale, who's been a frequent guest with us from USA Today, Hall of Fame voter. Bob, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
I want to start with the Hall of Fame ballot and the two that got in, Derek Jeter, Larry Walker. What did you think of their particular selection and how did it play out on your ballot?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very happy for Larry Walker. You know, I could have gone either way on that one. He's such a great guy, extreme talent. You know, the knock on Larry was he only averaged about 120 games a year. So as mentioned, about a quarter of the season every year. In that he only hit 377 home runs despite playing, you know, right field at Coors Field, which was really a bandbox back in the day because there was no humidor.
That's right.
And, of course, we all knew Jeter was getting in because the question of, you know, whether unanimous or not. But, you know, there's always, you know, someone out there. I mean, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. missed by three votes. But, you know, I think the unanimous thing is extremely overrated. I mean, you know, nobody got in unanimous back in Babe Ruth or Hank Aaron or whoever you want to, you know, mention. You know, now that the votes are more people are public with their ballots, I think that's where there's a lot more scrutiny.
Well, to me, it's just a curiosity factor. All you need is the 75%. After that, does it really matter? I mean, at least to me. Who would you make a case for that didn't make it this time, Bob?
Well, Schilling would get in. He's at 70%. He'll get in next year. You know, I had trouble with Schilling's victory total. I think it's 211. But, you know, he had a lot of bad years in there, but such a phenomenal postseason pitcher. And, hey, if we put in Roy Halladay last year at 204, kind of silly to keep Kurt Schilling out. You know, whatever his political views or says on Twitter, I mean, it's, you know, as a retired guy, so it should make no factor, you know, whatsoever. And I vote every single year for, you know, Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens. Mm-hmm. I still believe in my heart that they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, I don't think they'll get in there next year either. They got one more year. And I hope people don't try to lump him in with the Alex Rodriguez is on the ballot the same year. Because Alex Rodriguez is suspended for an entire season, you know, and killed the Yankees by being suspended. These guys never were suspended a single day, no testing, so never tested for positive, anything like that. What they did was, cross a moral barrier or not, but they did help their teams win, and nobody was complaining when they were on those teams or the manager or GM. They love the fact when guys were, juicing up.
Right. No, I understand exactly where you're coming from. All right, I've got to ask you about the Astros. I can't quite lump the Red Sox in yet because the investigation isn't finished yet. But what did you think of how Major League Baseball went about, A, the investigation, and B, how they ended up meeting out justice in this?
Well, I thought they went about it, very thorough, and I thought it was smart at the time, Steve, to say, okay, the players have immunity. That way, you can't be punished, but we got to speak openly about this. And they did. Baseball said they got great cooperation. They're not getting great cooperation by the Red Sox. And the difference is Houston Astros had one of their former players, Mike Byers, say what went on. The Boston Red Sox don't have that. So I think it's going to be a tougher investigation, see what happens here. Obviously, the Red Sox must have felt that, Cora was doing something illegal in 2018 as well, or else they wouldn't have fired him. I will say maybe, after this year, going forward, there'd be something between the union and the MLB saying, hey, if you were involved, you're subject to a, some kind of a suspension, 50 games or something else, if you're a player.
Interesting. Now, so far, three managers have lost their jobs over this, including Carlos Beltran with this. What can, if anything, Major League Baseball, other than the threats of suspensions and so forth, and $5 million fines, which is the max, what can they do to stop this?
Well, I think they were very careless before, just like they were back in the steroid days. They took way too long to react. Same thing here. Once they brought in the instant replay, it's so easy for every club in baseball to say, you know what, we're going to have our instant replay monitors right next to the bench, live feed. Hey, we'll tell, we can see what the catcher's putting down for signs. Let's tell these guys what's coming. And, no different than what's happened, throughout baseball when the guys in second base or first base doing signs or even guys in the bullpen have binoculars. But to do it electronically, they took it to a different level. But, hey, that's the way of the world with the new technology and everything else. So they took advantage of it. And I think what baseball's got to do is say, hey, you know what? These instant replay things have got to go. Move them up to the press box. You cannot have any, monitors close to the dugout at all. Got to be in the clubhouse. Just to take away any temptation whatsoever.
Yeah, I've always felt that they should do it a lot like college football does it. You put a fifth umpire up in the box with technicians. They have complete control over the video. And to me, no video in the dugouts, period. If you have to make a guess and take a challenge, take your guess and make a challenge. Don't use the video to do it.
Yeah, I like that because they, when they say, oh, the replay took, 120 to review. Well, it didn't because it took 30 seconds for the manager to say, I want to do it. Then there are 45 seconds or so for the technicians to come onto the field and grab the umpires. So it takes a lot longer than that. I like that. Hey, do it by the naked eye, or someone in the press box can do that. But, don't just wait to see if a guy is a half an inch up a bag.
Right. I mean, in other words, you're on your own here. Now, even in the NFL, for example, you see them with the tablets on the sideline. No videos allowed on the sideline when they're looking at pictures. And I just feel that you should put the fifth umpire with technicians up there. They control the video. Dugouts get nothing. Zero.
The NFL also has just, every camera is owned by them. Mm-hmm. Where in baseball, there's cameras everywhere.
Right.
Different teams, every TV network. That would put a stop to it as well.
Good point. Major League Baseball is in a tough spot right now because, obviously, the scandal with the Astros. Then even in a particular week where the Hall of Fame's announced, there's still even problems. The Red Sox thing is going to be announced at some point one way or the other. And now I want to bring an issue that's close to home here in State College. State College is a beautiful facility, the whole deal, but they're one of the 42 that's on the minor league block right now because it's the New York Penn League. All 14 are in that block. How do you view Major League Baseball's stance toward the minor leagues and potentially cutting 42 franchises, which include 42 towns that are connected to baseball? And already you don't have a good look nationally with the scandal, and now you look like the heavy in this.
Yeah, I think it's a great mistake. I mean, all it is just money. I think it costs $350,000 to field every Major League team. You know, and $350 is, pocket change to these teams that sports $11 billion revenue industry. And, yeah, if you want to have better facilities, you can threaten these guys and say, you know what, hey, you got to have a better facility here. Or, you know, you could be contracted, you know, a little bit like, you know, back in the day when people were talking about, you know, contracting the Expos, the Minnesota Twins, and everything
right.
else. Yeah. So that sort of thing. But I do believe that, now you live in there, as you see a young guy coming up, through the A-ball level there, and he becomes a star in the major leagues, certainly a star, just makes the major leagues, you start following that team or wherever he is. And you don't have that passion with that player if you had not seen him at such a young age.
Yeah, and full disclosure, the minor league team here, the State College Spikes, in the summer I announced their games. So, I mean, I'm connected with the team, so it's a little more personal in that regard. But, again, the facility here is no issue. I mean, this is the kind of facility they want in the minor leagues. They've got that. My issue with Major League Baseball is that you're not on a roll right now. Do you want to look at 42 towns in the country and not stay on a roll? Or do you want to be conciliatory?
I mean the minor league president is up in arms. Pat O'Connor, you can't believe it, and former players are upset. But just makes no sense to try to save a few pennies by doing that. Plus, you never know. Maybe some of these guys that are playing those levels, become major league stars. You can't just say, "Oh, these guys can't play," because you never know when a guy can develop. So, yeah, it's a shame that's happening. I'm not sure it'll go through. The irony of this whole thing is the mastermind behind this whole idea.
Yes.
Was Jeff Luhnow, the GM of the Houston Astros, who's been suspended. It was his idea.
Yeah, I know.
And now he's back in baseball.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, State College is averaging four major leaguers per season here. So that in the end, they're averaging four major leaguers per season over their first 14 years. That's not bad.
And people love minor league baseball. It's just that you're so close to the action. It kind of reminds you of, I go to all the spring training camps, but you're so close here. People love spring training. There's a lot of people that like spring training games more than regular season games.
Yeah.
And I think the same way is people like minor league baseball in some ways a lot more than major league games.
Well, you know how much we respect you. Thanks so much, Bob. Appreciate it. Really appreciate your work, too.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Steve.
Baseball revenue now is $11.7 billion. They've done a good job with international growth, but they've also had higher ticket prices, and streaming have kept revenues growing. So those are all pluses. But the aesthetics of the game are being hurt, and part of the aesthetics of the game is the image that you're going to have. You're going to look at 42 towns and say, geez, I don't think so. Just because you want to save in an $11.7 billion industry, a little bit of money. You have right now the average length of a game, 3 hours, 10 minutes, which is 10 minutes higher than when Rob Manfred took over. The average pitch time has gone from 22.7 seconds in 2015 to 24.9 seconds. Now, that's per pitch. You're like, that's only 2 seconds. Now you start adding it up. Strikeouts up, pitching changes up over the last 5 years since he took over. And here's what else has happened. Less action. From 2015 to 2019, attendance has dropped 5.2 million. There are 2,151 fewer fans per game. Right now, Major League Baseball has tremendous financial growth. They've been able to take advantage of a lot of items to get it to be an $11.7 billion industry. It's one of the reasons why the commissioners spent part of this week in Davos, in Switzerland, among some of the other high-powered CEOs in the world, because Major League Baseball puts him in that position at $11.7 billion. There are going to be a lot of other things that he's going to have to deal with, but one of them is going to be the Major League the minor league baseball issue. And this is going to be a problem. Because what has happened in recent time is that you've had, you know, State College, for example, has a fabulous facility. All right, it was built in conjunction. It's a great model, college baseball with minor league baseball. Great model. But Williamsport's a really good example. Do you realize that Williamsport is one of many minor league facilities where they have poured money in to upgrade the facility? Now they're being told you might not have a team? Huh? What? You're doing that. So, Manfred did say, he says, I don't think they should blame me for wanting to have decent working conditions for employees. So you're looking, okay, let's just take State College. Excuse me, that's what you're looking for. At the end of the day, we will not save one dime. Even if we went out and got rid of all 42 of them, see, the key is even if we went out. So the if part is the key. And got rid of all 42 of them, what would we have to spend in order to get improvements I want in the existing places? It would probably cost us money. We're talking about profit. When we're talking about profit, I'm not shy about it. That's not about making money. Well, you've already got a place here where you're not going to have to put any money in. And that's why part of this is really skewed to me. He makes a statement like that. In other words, how many times have you heard me say, look, if you want to really talk about an issue, you've got to get your hands dirty? When was the last time Rob Manfred went to a New York Penn League game? The last time he went to an Appalachian League game, Pioneer League game, where he can evaluate the facility? I mean, first of all, again, as Bob Nightingale pointed out, and we have pointed out too, remember when the scandal hit, I said, ironically, the guy whose proposal to cut this back is Jeff Luhnow. Well, guess what? He's the guy that's out of a job right now. But Tom Verducci did, as usual, another really great job with a long-form interview with him. I know it's funny because I've talked to Tom before, he's a Penn State grad, so I've talked to him several times. I've even had him on the air for a Spikes game, whatever. We got to get him on the show at some point. We never had him on the show, and he's as good as it gets in terms of writing and being involved to the point where they've even got Fox was even crossing him over and doing some college football work, which is good. Because, I mean, Tom's not just a baseball guy. He's a sports guy. By the way, not only will we have Dick Girardi on the show on college basketball tomorrow, Alex Peachin, Bucknell's punter, who was just at the East-West Shrine game, and, by the way, wowed them out there, is going to be with us tomorrow at 3:35. So Alex will be on the show tomorrow. Looking forward to talking with him. Be like the quarterback club where they say to me, hey, Steve, the punter's here this week. We can make it work. We can make it work. Sylvia D'Souza for Kansas. The Big 12 handed down a 12-game suspension to him. And to be honest with you, they flat out got it wrong. Have you looked at the suspension? he's allowed to come back the final regular season game. Really? So that allows him to get a, quote, game under his belt before postseason play starts. He should have been, no offense, the moment he picked up the chair, and I know he ended up dropping the chair, but who knows, he could have dropped it on somebody. You know, inadvertently, he wouldn't have noticed, but there are people scrambling all over the place. The moment he picked up the chair, he then established the possibility of using a weapon. We're done. They'll say, well, you know, he's a really great kid. Well, he wasn't a really great kid there. He wasn't a really great kid when he was standing over woofing at the other guy, at Gordon laying on the ground. Now, that would have meant, if he just walked away, it still would have meant nothing. He wasn't a great kid when he was pushing and shoving, and he absolutely was not a great kid when he picked up the chair. To me, your season should be over. The Big 12 flat out got it wrong. And the fact that he is allowed to come back to play a regular season game so he can get back into the, which in reality is to get him back into the flow of playing before postseason play, tells you how wrong the suspension is. They got it wrong. They got it wrong. Okay. Come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Alex Peachin on the show tomorrow at 3:35. We'll talk about the East-West Shrine Game. Dick Girardi on the show tomorrow. We go to Dick in Milton. Hello, Dick. How have you been? Thanks for your patience.
That's okay, Steve. Oh, by the way, Alex Peachin, he's a peach if I've ever seen one. This guy's wonderful and a great speaker. You'll really enjoy your time with him. But
that's not why
I called. What I wanted to call yesterday, you said about Illinois and Penn State playing a game where the coaches are going to be mic'd during the game, I guess, and in the locker rooms?
I guess all the way through. It was explained to me yesterday. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. Really? This is, quote, the all-access game? I mean, how much access do you need?
I'll tell you what, that could be problematic at best. I'm really serious about that. I mean, for guys spends a lot. I mean, I love coaches, and they do a great job. But, boy, I'll tell you what, I'm not sure that's going to work out well.
I mean, Dick, I'm with you all the way. You and I are on the exact same page. It was explained to me, and I was like, you have to be kidding me. And I know Pat and I talked briefly about it, and he is reluctantly doing it. But, you know.
Well, this game's not taking place in church. I guess that's my point. I've been to basketball games sitting down close to the court when I've heard coaches yelling and screaming at players at times and whatever, and some of their languages is something I wouldn't want on the air. I think they say it without even thinking sometimes.
And I've been with Pat at church many times, and he actually is very good. But when it comes to the back,
sure,
when it comes
sure
to the sideline,
I told a guy this last night over at the Bucknell women's game about this, and he listens to your show a lot, and I said, I don't know how this is going to work out. I said, I think it's in February, the Illinois game, Penn State game.
It is.
I said, I wonder if they thought this out before they actually came up with this idea.
Oh boy! You know, see, this is what I think is happening, Dick. Let's take the Penn State Illinois thing as a vehicle here, all right? For what I'm going to talk about, and that is this: I think television is attempting to come up with so many different ways to bring you something that's new and fresh that they're getting away from just why you and I enjoy watching it to begin with. That we just want to watch the game. Like the Pro Bowls this week. I mean, Matt was saying it's really cool to hear them call the plays. You have no idea what the play is. When you hear them call the play, oh, great. They called XYZ12. Really? It's going to be a pass to the wideout. Sure it is.
Well, as I say, this could be a very entertaining and maybe a one and done as far as I'm
I hope it's a one and done. But you know what? It puts coaches in a really sometimes a coach will say something to a player, right? And they back this, they've done everything off the court for them, they've backed them all the way, but they may say something to motivate them, get them back in gear. And it can come off as completely negative, and the player doesn't view it that way. I don't know. If they're going to do it, that's fine. Go for it, that's fine. Okay. So it's.
Well, you know, occasionally you'll watch a game where they actually have 35 or 40 seconds where the guy's mic'd or something, but not entirely, especially in the locker rooms. I mean, I just can't even.
And it's not.
I wouldn't even go there with that.
It's not live. Yeah. It's not live either. When they show you what's happening in the huddle, it's already on tape, and they've already looked at it in the truck and said, "Okay, let's go." This is going to be. I don't know how they're going to do this. I do know that if you want to see it, you can see it. Joe Davis, who does the Dodgers, is going to be the play-by-play guy for it. I know that. And Dick and I will be on the radio.
As I say, it'll be interesting. By the way, Penn State looked good last night again at Michigan. I mean, I'm not sure they were the underdog favor. Maybe it was a push game, but you're obviously playing at Michigan, and teams were pretty equal record-wise. So, but they did. They played very well. They're playing well. They just had a couple blurbs here or there where they didn't play as well as they have been at times, and. I don't know. It's pretty competitive in the Big Ten getting there. I would think they'll get a tournament bid the way they've played this year, but we'll see. Who knows?
I would think if you get to 10-10 in the league, I'm talking about any league, any team in the league, if they can get to 10-10, I think they become a lock. I think even 9-11 in the league, especially if you played a good schedule, non-con to go with the one you played in the league, I think can get you in too. I think that... obviously, as you said, there's a long way to go in this. But people will tell you, and as Seth Greenberg said in the show yesterday, and Dana O'Neill, by the way, from The Athletic, told me the exact same thing, so they're both on the same page. The two conferences that have greater quality depth than any in the country are the Big Ten and the Big East.
The biggest thing for them is to get through three games in the tournament, in the Big Ten tournament. They can't get knocked out early, I guess is my point. Well, they got to win some there.
I think if you go 10-10 in the league, Dick, I don't think you. I think you know, it'd be nice to win a game, but I don't think it's going to be a prerequisite. Because let's take Penn State for example right now, and this is with 12 to play. So please, let's just take it for now. Penn State, for now, has the 16th ranked schedule in the country. Okay, they're 14-5, and Kansas has 8 quad one wins. That's number one. Seton Hall has 6 quad one wins. That's number two. Penn State has 5 quad one wins. Penn State's third in the nation in quad one wins. I mean, that's what their resume is to this hour. Now, they have to keep helping themselves. They have to keep winning. The bottom line is, though, on January 23rd, they have now put themselves in a position with wins they will put themselves firmly in. That's my point.
They don't have any what you would call losses to teams that on their schedule that they should have won, do they?
No.
I mean, I'm not talking about Big Ten. I'm just talking about out of conference losses to somebody.
Yeah, the only one they have is Ole Miss. The only one they have is Ole Miss.
Well, that's not a bad loss there. I mean, that's the only
non-conference loss that they have. They went 10-1 in the non-con.
Yeah, I knew they won most of their games. I knew that. So they,
I mean, they put themselves again.
They hope they advance to the tournament this year.
They need to keep winning. In other words, when they went through the bad stretch that you properly referenced, I made the statement on the show. I said, here's the odd thing is, Alabama just beat Auburn, which was Auburn's first loss of the year. Syracuse won at Virginia. Right? Georgetown just beat Creighton. I said, Penn State is actually getting help from their schedule. Now, I said Penn State needs to go out and help itself. And in beating Ohio State and winning at Michigan, they've done exactly that in the last week. Now you have to keep helping yourself.
Well, if they keep playing their game, there's nobody in the conference that they will not or cannot beat, put it to you that
yeah.
way.
I agree with you. I think that's right, Dick. I agree with you. They're just going to go out and just keep on going.
Yeah, one game at a time. Okay, Steve, anyhow, well, I'll look forward to the Illinois-Penn State game and the Mike game. That'll be maybe they'll do away with it before it comes up.
I cannot wait to hear you. I cannot wait to hear your evaluation of it.
Well, I'm sure there'll be lots of evaluations in that game.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Brad Underwood said yes first, the Illinois coach. So Pat was like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to do this. It's like, okay. So they're doing it.
And not only do the coaches have to watch what they say, but the players along the bench have to be careful what they say at any given moment.
I know.
We'll see. It'll be interesting. All right, Steve. Nice talking to you.
Hey, you too, my friend. Thanks, Dick. Dick and Milton joining us on the show today. We won't even do all access of our staff meetings.
And that would be interesting, too.
Because
you might want to think about that twice.
Oh, the suit goes insane. All right. And then, Lawrence and Alexander are both sitting there, and they're falling asleep. So,
actually.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like watching an episode of The Office.
And for the record, I actually don't think this is a good idea either. If you want to do this for something like the Pro Bowl where there's nothing on the line, go right ahead. Or if you want to do this in season like the NFL does, just don't do it live. That's fine. Just don't do it live so you don't have anything questionable that goes over the air. I mean, this is going to be a headache for whoever's directing this game on FS1 on Saturday.
Well, it'll be February 18th, so it's
oh, sorry. Time, yeah, for a, yeah, yeah, a little while yet. Yeah.
Let me bring up one addendum to it about people being mic'd. Sam Darnold, New York Jets. Sam Darnold, the New York Jets, is mic'd in the game. It's approved, and nothing is live. It's listened to, and the NFL, I want to say it's somebody from NFL Network or NFL.com, but affiliated with the league, has to approve what ESPN airs on the mic. So when you hear them, it's obviously on tape. And with Darnold, he made the comment about, I feel against the Patriots, I feel like I'm seeing ghosts. Well, he was just skewered for saying that all over the place. Now, he agreed to wear the mic, okay? The NFL did not do him any favors. I mean, part of this is to protect everybody, and whomever was doing that didn't protect him at all. He got skewered. And boy, ESPN, which was the last line of defense in this, I don't want to hear how they're innocent in this. Right? As soon as they got the approval, they couldn't wait to air it.
But that's how they are now.
Yes.
That's why they lost all journalistic integrity for me.
Right. They could have said, no, you know what? Let's not do this. It's going to make him look awful. But they aired it. So now for a couple of weeks, right, they talked about it. Then even later in the season, they referenced it on Monday Night Football. You know, and laughed about it. Ha ha, ha ha, ha ha. Well, first of all, he's still just a kid. I mean, I know, what's Darnold now, 23? 24, still a rookie. You should be allowed to just make some. I don't know. Like I said, they want to present some inside all the time to make the broadcast better, different, the whole thing. I don't need that. I don't need to hear what they're saying on the sideline. I don't need to hear what they're thinking. I don't need to do any of that. I could care less. You know, I mean, I realize, for example, when HBO did the week with Penn State football, James Franklin's mic'd up during the game. So some parts are, hey, happy, great. Other times he's mad about, somebody missed an assignment, they didn't convert something, whatever. Okay, typical. Right? I guess in post-mortem, But I don't want to hear him during the game doing that. Post-mortem, where you already know the result, where you're sitting there and you already know they beat Purdue. Okay. It's a nice documentary. How about that? The documentary part. Yeah, the Chiefs are going to play in their first Super Bowl in 50 years. How often do you hear people impersonate Hank Stram saying, matriculate the ball down the field, boys? Just keep matriculating the ball down the field, boys, because NFL films mic'd them. But they did it post-mortem, and they did it in victory. As opposed to in the heat of the battle and the Darnold thing. Now, how far after they aired it? I don't know if it was, you know, after the series was over and then, you know, and then a few minutes later he aired it, the whole, whatever. It made a young quarterback look bad. And now the young quarterback who says something, you know, look, do you think you're aware you're wearing the mic the entire time? Now, when I'm wearing a mic for a studio show or whatever, I am aware I'm wearing the mic the entire time. And I can tell you right now, you know one of the most important times to make sure the mic is off? Is when you have to go, believe it or not, because they're listening in the truck, to the restroom. I'm not kidding you.
I totally understand where you're coming from.
You have to be aware of this all the time. Okay? When you're wearing the mic, you can't have private conversations. You can't. You can't say somebody to somebody, like, oh, man, boy, that last segment, I really felt that was off in that last segment. You can't do that. Right? Just something like that. You can't do that. I mean, you can't, because if you've got the mic on, you're not allowed to have a private car. So he's out there, and he's trying to make plays, and it feels like there's 14 guys out there in the whole deal. And he can't look at it. One of his coaches, I don't even know which coach he said it to, said, I see ghosts. Now, did he swear? No. Was he mad? No. Was he confused? Yeah. Right? Did he end up looking good by the comment? No. I just don't. There's too much video and too many mics. So I was just talking with Bob Nightingale about stripping down video so the teams have no access to it. Hey, I'm sorry. No access. Tough beans. Guess what? You're going to have to look at it and say, you know, I think I'll challenge that. No help. What the heck? Now, if you look up at the scoreboard and see on the scoreboard, and again, there should be replays on the scoreboard all the time because the people who pay the money should see what you see at home. But it should be from the TV network, not from an internal feed. Major League Baseball, like the NFL, has control over all the cameras in the stadium. Baseball needs to do the same thing. So does hockey. So does the NBA. And so does college football and college basketball. They need to have control over all the cameras. You shouldn't have access to any of it if you're coaching, unless you're looking at the scoreboard and you can see it up on the scoreboard, like the fans. But at that point, it's too late to challenge. Just my opinion. But there's too much. We're going to take you inside. Oh, for goodness sakes. Really? I need to see you inside? Really? I got to hear your pregame pep talk? Okay. You know how I feel about pregame pep talks. You run out of that tunnel. Here we go. 15 minutes later, you're finally playing. No offense, it kind of wears off a little. Sorry, but I look at things realistically. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, Coach's Show tonight, taking place at Permane Brothers here in downtown State College. So I'll be back with you in about an hour. Patrick Chambers will join us. He'll be on the phone tonight. He's out recruiting tonight, and he will be with us. And Mark Pavlik, the head coach of the men's volleyball team, is on because they've got UCLA and USC this weekend in Rec Hall. Also, Bucknell women's basketball on a roll. They've won 7 in a row. They beat Colgate with relative ease last night for that 7th consecutive win.
So they have now have control in the Patriot League. So that's great for the Bucknell women's basketball team. Coming up after the coaches show tonight, we'll have Shikellamy Wrestling at Jersey Shore. Steve Williams will join you as soon as we're done at 7 o'clock with all the action with Shikellamy and Jersey Shore. Steve does an awesome job on high school wrestling. He is the when it comes to high school wrestling, he's the best in the business. And we're proud to have him, and he'll do a great job on Shikellamy Jersey Shore tonight. Shikellamy in that bounce-back mode after that loss to Selins Grove for the first time since 1978. See, I read your notes.
There you go.
You don't think I pay attention to you.
I know you're there.
Huh? What? Oh, the joke's this easy. Thank you. All right. Alex Peachum will join us tomorrow, the outstanding punter. As Dick said, they've had it. I'm going to assume that Alex has been to some like their version of quarterback club and things like that. Everybody says he's just a great guy.
Oh, yeah. He's a great guy.
To.
Absolutely.
I am looking forward to talking to him, and boy, did he pound out some punting numbers. Wow.
I mean, he shattered every FCS record known to man throughout the last two seasons.
Yeah, he'll get himself to a camp. They'll want to see somebody like that.
Definitely.
They will want to see somebody like that. And Dick Girardi tomorrow on college basketball. I talked to Brendan Quinn of The Athletic last night. He says, Steve, when am I coming back on your show? I said, all right. The good thing is we're now getting people asking to be on.
Moving on up.
I mean, Quinny said to me, he said, you got rid of the suit guy, right? I said, yeah. He says, can I come back on? I said, well, what's wrong with the suit guy? He says, well, I wanted to talk college basketball, and all he wanted to do was talk about IndyCar. I said, I know.
I'll hook him up.
No, Brendan Quinn is one of the outstanding long-form writers in this country. You know, he's like Dana O'Neill. They just have great ideas, very well thought out, great sources.